Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're lucky to have Joe Lindsley at our beck and call from Ukraine. Since the war started, we've had Joe on frequently, and I noticed over the weekend, The Hill, which is a publication here in the U.S., had a byline from Joe, and I read the headline, and I was kind of shocked because lots of people, I think Donald Trump's coming in, and with Donald Trump's coziness, for lack of a better term, with Vladimir Putin, that would be bad for Ukraine.
And America first attitude.
Right.
You know, we've even heard J.D. Vance say that he wants an isolationist policy with Ukraine.
And one of the lines that I read from Joe is the media won't report it. Well, we're reporting, but many Ukrainians are very excited at Donald Trump's return. Well, let's ask Joe why. He joins us on the John Schuster Coble Banker Hotline. Joe, thank you for joining us. Why is that? And explain that, because I think a lot of Americans feel otherwise.
Yeah, hello, Adam and Jordana. Hello from a snowy Kyiv. And, you know, I observed this. I was here in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, on the day after the election. And for the preceding several months, there was a very heavy atmosphere here. People were very depressed. They really couldn't see a way, I think, out of a lot of this. And a lot of that was due to the restrictions that the Biden administration continued to place on Ukraine, and even restrictions from Washington on the UK and France from helping Ukraine, from giving Ukraine long-range weapons. And so when Trump was elected, it wasn't this, like, there was not a sense of jubilation, but there was a sense that at least with someone like Trump, there would be clarity. It would be either a firm yes or a firm no, rather than sort of the gray in between. But that sort of gave people here a shift in mindset. It gave them a goal, a new objective, something kind of fresh to work toward. And I think as we've seen these past months, you know, especially in what I call the court of Mar-a-Lago, there's been a lot of maneuvering on all different topics to influence the shape of the incoming administration. And, you know, we've seen, I mean, President Zelensky just said yesterday, he said that Putin is only afraid of, Putin's not afraid of very much. He said he's afraid of Donald Trump and maybe of China. I think some Ukrainians might take issue with that. I think they'd say, well, Putin's afraid of free people. But this is very notable that Zelensky would say that. And I think he's been very shrewd here. And if we look at, there was an extraordinary moment, Adam and Jordana, that happened in Paris over the past weekend with the reopening of Notre Dame. And President Macron, I think he knew exactly what he was doing when, in his choosing of the world leaders that he brought there. You know, Elon Musk was there in Notre Dame. Elon Musk has been making fun of Zelensky in the past months. But President Macron also invited, of course, Trump, who sat next to him, and President Zelensky. And he's trying to, you know, shape. It was almost, to me, as I observed it, it was a moment of saying, you know, we need to remember what our values are as Western civilization, as democracies, and you know, that we have more power than we realize. And, you know, since then, since that moment in Paris, I started to see a shift in what Trump is saying about Ukraine. Now he's saying that Ukrainians, not only Zelensky, he's speaking of Ukrainian people, too. Previously, it was all about Zelensky. And now he's saying Zelensky and the Ukrainians are willing to negotiate. And previously, Trump generally only said that of the Russians. He made the Russians seem to be the more reasonable people. And now there's a shift saying, actually, wait, it's Ukrainians that want peace and freedom, and they're willing to negotiate. And so there is a shift happening. You know, it's a continual process. And even President Zelensky, after Trump made those comments, said, yeah, we're willing to negotiate, but we also recognize the stark reality that Putin does not want to end this war, that Putin wants to destroy us. So I think there are a lot of positive signs, but I think for, you know, Ukrainians and those who support Ukraine, you know, there's never a moment to let up on making the case to Team Trump. And that's, you know, my story in The Hill. It was a bit cheeky because several of the people, I know most of the people I mentioned in that story, I proposed three three Ukrainians who I think would be good representatives to the United States, and four Americans who I thought would be good representatives from the U.S. to Ukraine in a way that could kind of help break the divide between MAGA world and Ukraine. And the Ukrainians I list there, I think, you know, if American Republicans heard these people, they would love them. But these voices are not amplified by either the government here in Kyiv or by the media. For example, I mentioned the warrior called Gandalf. That's his call sign. He's from the Azov Regiment, which Russia has really maligned. Azov is sort of like the Cajun Navy, just the people that want to defend their faith, family, and freedom. And Gandalf's a great character, the Serhiy Sarkovsky, who defeated Roger Federer at Wimbledon, and now he's a soldier. So just some great Ukrainian personalities. And then on the American side, to break through this, you know, I there's some people I know, like Morgan Ortegas. She used to work for Mike Pompeo. She's very close to Donald Trump. She doesn't talk about Ukraine very much, but she never attacks Ukraine. She understands the situation. And I think someone like her, who she's a Navy veteran, who does have the ear of Trump, could help bridge the divide between the MAGA world and the Ukrainian people.
Joe, I'm always so grateful to hear your voice. You sound well. But you mentioned that Zelensky is willing to negotiate. What is he willing to negotiate for? Is he at a place where he's willing to cede land back to Russia to make this war stop?
Well, and I think for the Ukrainians, whatever, like the international framework is sort of talking about ceding land. But for Ukrainians, you know, every time you talk about giving up land, that also means the people on that land, you know, the people that then have to live under Russian occupation. I think Zelensky is cognizant of this because the public makes him aware of it, that they don't want to give up, people who are displaced. They want to be able to go back home. That's why it's a tricky thing. But I think Zelensky realizes the language of Trump, you know, Mr. Art of the Deal, and he's speaking that. He's trying to construct a situation where, you know, again, where Ukraine is sort of the more reasonable partner here. I think one thing that Ukrainians have done to give them a lot of more leverage on this, it's something that no one talks about anymore. But, you know, Ukrainians are still in the Kursk region of Russia. They're still on Russian soil. That's caused a big problem for Russia. Russia's really trying to downplay it. But if we look at, you know, the collapse of the regime in Syria, which was, Russia totally backed the Assad regime. Russia has now lost a lot of its military resources they had in Syria. They had a warm water port on the Mediterranean, on the Syrian coast. They no longer have access to that. It's a major collapse for Russia as well. And I do think that the distraction of having Ukrainians on Russian soil has weakened Russia's ability to maneuver here. Putin fired the governor of that Ukrainian-occupied region in Russia, the second governor he's fired in several months, and he's been unable to get that back. And so that actually was giving Ukraine a lot of leverage here, to maybe trade, you know, that, hey, let's take Ukrainian land back, and we'll give you back this Kursk region of Russia. I think that could actually be a move that would be acceptable maybe, to Trump and to others.
Talking to J.P. Lindsley from Ukraine. But as recently, Joe, as you know, Sunday when he sat down with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, President-elect Trump says, you know, that Ukraine possibly could receive less funding and that, European countries should pitch in more. I mean, you mentioned that the uncertainty over what's coming from the Biden administration has really worn down Ukrainians at this point, but they hear that from Donald Trump saying, well, they possibly could get less funding. That can't be good news to them.
Well, yes, it does, because partly I would take issue with the question that that Kristen asked the president-elect, because President Zelensky's been making this very clear the past couple of months. Ukraine is not asking for more money. He said Ukraine right now has enough money to sustain operations for more than a year, possibly several years. What they need are better weapons and permission to actually use them. And that's been what the Biden administration, under the policy of National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, has been reluctant to do. For the media to ask, you know, are you going to reduce aid for Ukraine? Well, that's not even what Ukraine's not asking for more money. That sort of feeds into, I think, the anti-Ukraine narrative. Zelensky is very clear. It's not more money. It's support that actually works. Weapons Ukrainians can use to hit the sources of Russian hits upon Ukrainian cities. And, for example, something that cost America, well, officially not much, but strengthening the sanctions. The Biden administration still gives waivers to Russian banks only if they work in the oil business, which are the most, the most powerful Russian banks have been protected. They've not been sanctioned precisely because they help facilitate oil transactions, which is exactly what has enabled Russia to continue going. And so if those things could be fixed, that's really what Ukraine wants. It's not more money and more aid.
Thanks for laying that out, Joe. And Joe, how are you? Where are you? How are you? How are you getting by and surviving and your group?
It's we are Ukrainian Freedom News team. We continue to get drones and trucks and vehicles, to our friends at the front. I continue to report every single weekday for more than 1,020 days of this war now on Chicago WGN Radio. And we had a group here last week of leading Republicans, people close to Trump, came here to Ukraine to very courageously to find out the reality. And so these are signs of hope for Ukraine to see this. And so it's been quite a busy time. There are frequent blackouts throughout Ukraine, but I have to say it's not as bad as everyone anticipated. And actually, since the American election, what had been really like several times a week, very terrible attacks on Ukrainian cities, they've been reduced. I think Putin is waiting. He's also got the Syria mess, but he's also waiting to figure out what to do next. So I can't even tell you right now when was the last time I heard an explosion. It was at least several weeks ago. So I have a little bit of peace of mind these days.
That's interesting. Yeah. You think it's because of the distraction of Syria? Putin's got different priorities?
I think it's that, and I think it's also realizing the Kremlin's going to have to change strategy because, there's a new administration and things could be very different. Mm-hmm. And that also points to the question of, people say, why won't Europe pull its weight? Well, if you look at, France and the UK have wanted to give Ukraine these Storm Shadow scout missiles. They've given some of them, but they've wanted to let Ukraine use them to hit targets on Russian soil. And it was the White House that said no. So, but Germany is an outlier. Germany's been reluctant to help Ukraine. But countries like France and UK have been trying to do more, and it's the U.S. that has said no. We also look at the tiny kingdom of Denmark. They just a new batch of F-16 fighter jets just arrived in Ukraine from Denmark. It was only last summer that the U.S. gave permission because it's American technology. Even if Denmark owns it, you needed the White House's permission. Finally, that arrived, but it's a tiny nation of Denmark that's sending F-16s to Ukraine, not the U.S. So I think Europeans want to do more, but they've been limited so far by Washington.
JP, continue to be safe. Thank you so much for the time, as always, and a Merry Christmas to you and to you and all the people of Ukraine.
Thank you, Joe.
Indeed. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to you all, and I look forward to our next conversation. Good evening from Kiev.
Yeah, thank you, JP Lindsley, live with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll react to what he had to say because got a lot to react to there. 10:50 on CCO.